Hello, welcome to another episode of Unpacking Neuroqueerness. Today I have another very special guest back on the podcast, Ashra, also known as the Autistic Thrifter. If you haven't checked out my episodes, my previous episodes with Ashra, 127 and 141, I highly recommend those episodes. Ashra and I are good friends, and she's also, she runs autism support groups for autistic adults. And of course, she's also the creator of Autistic Thrifter on Instagram. Without further ado, welcome back, Ashra.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be on again.
Yes, I'm excited to have you on again as well. And today, Ashra and I are going to talk about the show Girls on HBO and how we feel a lot of those characters might be neurodivergent coded, and like the connections we see, and so Ashra actually has watched this show several times, and she actually got me into it when we started communicating a few months ago, and then I watched the whole thing, and especially the second half. I went through it in like, gosh, maybe a week or two. I started moving really fast. So getting right into it, my first question for you, Ashra, is how did the... I remember you mentioning that the first time you watched the show, it was with your mom. And so tell us a little bit about how that was, like the first time you watched it, and then also how the experience differed, like, each time you watched it after that.
Yeah, so the first time I watched Girls was actually when it was originally airing, which I don't know what year that was, but it was definitely probably, like, what do you think? Do you know? Maybe it was, like, 10 to 15 years ago?
I think it was 2012, roughly, yeah.
Okay.
So 12 years.
So when it was originally airing is when I watched it with my mom. I was probably a little bit young for that show, but I was also quite mature in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So I guess my mom kind of didn't mind me watching it with her. She also didn't exactly know what to expect because it was her first time seeing it, of course, too. But we watched it together, and I remember really liking it, but also definitely being a little bit young to understand exactly what was happening. And of course, I couldn't like really relate to what was happening in the show at that time. But there was definitely something in me that really loved it, even at that young age. Because several years later, I ended up going back and watching it again. And I think it was actually probably when I was in college. So it was definitely quite a few years later, but when I was in college, I went back and rewatched it. And I think that's when I really fell in love with it. Like my first introduction, I liked it, but my next rewatch in college, that's when I really, really fell in love with the show. And I think I watched it one time through and really loved it. But I don't know that I watched it again at that point. It was then several years later again, after college, that I watched it again. So this was probably my third rewatch. And that's when I really was like, okay, like this might be my favorite show. I was like, this is really like, and this was before I was diagnosed too. So I think I really, really at that time, at my third rewatch, that's when I started relating to Hannah's character a lot. And I think probably before it, like in my first and second watch, I probably was relating, but not exactly putting the pieces together of like why it was really hitting home for me. But in that third rewatch, I think that's when I started to make the connection of like, oh, I think I'm really relating to Hannah's character. And then I think another year or two went by and I then started watching it again. And that is when I started watching it, and to this point, like, pretty much never stopped watching it.
Yeah.
So I think that started in 2021, and it's 2024. So I've been watching this show on repeat for years now, And I think it's a mixture of, like, every time I've watched it, it progressively just became more of a comfort thing. But I also, that time when in 2021 when I started rewatching again, I think that's when I started learning about autism as well. Mm-hmm. And it was really specifically once I ended up self-diagnosing that this became like a very, very strong comfort show and also like a very important show for my diagnosis journey.
Yeah.
Because it's when I started really realizing like why I related to the characters so much and why the show was just like really, really important and pivotal for me in learning about myself.
Yeah, very, very cool. Very interesting how that happened. And I can definitely see that happening, especially if, like, as you watched it again and as you were discovering more about yourself, because I can relate to a similar experience with the show The Big Bang Theory. And it was like, I remember even doing a review on it. I think it's episode 136 or something. And it's tricky because like there are a lot of things like that were problematic about like the way they treated Sheldon and everything, and also like it's kind of a representation of like one specific flavor of autism, which is like the adult male level one autistic kind of scenario. But and it's like, of course, not all autistics are like that, but there were a lot of traits and like things, characteristics about Sheldon that I resonated a lot with, like his not understanding of like social norms and constructs, and being very, having like very strong special interests, you know, like things like that, like sensory stuff, like, you know, there were just like a lot, lots of different things in there that I could see and relate to. Yeah, on the topic of Hannah, what were like some of the first things like when you started making that association, or even like maybe even like before you realized that you were autistic, what were some of the first things that popped up for you about Hannah? Maybe even if you didn't know that it was autism yet, what were some of the things that you started noticing about her that you resonated a lot with?
I think probably the main thing that I noticed about Hannah and that I really loved about Hannah and still do love is the honest way that she communicates with people. I think it's one of the first episodes where it's like Marnie's boyfriend reads Hannah's diary and like without permission, and it's like a real invasion of privacy and stuff. And then like ends up basically in like a really dramatic performance telling Marnie and everyone else that he read the diary and he saw that Hannah had written some things about Marnie's relationship with him. Basically saying that like Marnie wasn't happy and like needed more and there was, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But after that whole, there's like a whole big blow up, and at the end of it, Hannah asks Marnie, like, as a literary piece, what did you think of it? And the way that she kind of, I think a lot of people would interpret it as selfish, but from my viewpoint, I interpreted it as like, she wasn't really seeing the emotional intensity of Marnie's experience or what Marnie was going through. And because of that, she wasn't like appropriately showing up in the situation and was like more so concerned about how Marnie was interpreting like the literary aspects of the piece,
yeah,
because she was viewing it as like one of her essays. And I had a lot of like, I guess, empathy for Hannah in that moment, because it felt like it wasn't a purposeful dismissal of Marnie's feelings, but it was more so that Hannah genuinely like wasn't seeing why it would be inappropriate to ask that question at that time.
Yeah.
And I really related to that. I think that's one of the first things I related to. And more than anything else, something that I really relate to with Hannah is the way that the outside world, the way that the audience sees her. Because when I first started, like, I would write in Reddit about different ways that I was interpreting Hannah and the show. And I would talk to people about it because it was like a big, I don't know if I'd call it a special interest, but it, like, Girls, the show, is just a huge part of my life. So I talk about it a lot. And I realized that people interpret Hannah as really selfish and like brash and harsh and very dismissive of people, which is so interesting because I never saw her that way. Like, now that people have told me that, you know, I can be open to that viewing of her, but I never ever initially saw her that way. Like, I saw her as very honest to herself. And also, I see her also as like a very good friend and a loyal person. And I do think she can miss certain cues and can also like sometimes miss other people's experiences, which I think is a part of cognitive empathy. I think she struggles with that, which I also relate to. But what I relate to so much is that the world sees her in a certain way that I don't see her. And I feel that way about myself often. Like, the world could interpret me in a way that I completely didn't mean. So I think that's the first thing that I really related to with Hannah.
Yeah, I can definitely see how I can see that happening. And I could see, I also noticed like Hannah being like very honest and straightforward, and even in a way like I could see how that could come across to neurotypicals differently than it could come across to us. Like, but I also relate a lot to, like, you know, just being like thinking very like literally and also like legitimately like wanting to know something, mm-hmm. and not really being aware of all like the social constructs, but also like, you know, like you said, with cognitive empathy, like knowing why the other person is upset or might be upset or me or like it, why I shouldn't ask them this. Like, I've definitely felt that a lot before in my life too. And it's interesting, you know, because there is a disconnect with the neurotypicals where it gets interpreted. And I'm sure, like, I feel like this is how Hannah's character was interpreted by a lot of people too, where we get interpreted as selfish or as too blunt or whatnot, or we get told that we don't have empathy, but it's more that we struggle with a certain kind of empathy, like you said, that we struggle with cognitive empathy, like knowing why someone is upset but we have a lot of emotional empathy. Like, I've always felt that, like, Sheldon, I feel like, not to go back too much into the other show, but I can see that relation to, like, being perceived that way and actually feeling things very intensely, because he was also someone that you could tell, like, inside that he did have a lot of empathy, like, because he could tell when something was off with someone. And I feel like Hannah was the same way, but but it's like, what is it and why? And then I feel also like sometimes just by us wanting to know, and then legitimate, like, when we, and then we go to ask them why, and then just the act of wanting to know why and the way it comes across to others, we get misinterpreted for it. So yeah, and I definitely saw those characteristics in Hannah as well. I saw how she was just kind of trying to figure things out and trying to understand, and then, you know, like, working on herself and trying to build this career. And I remember, like, the first, I think it was the very first scene of the show, that her parents are cutting her off.
Yeah.
And I like, felt bad for her. And I think, like, in the society that we live in today, like, there's this expectation that everyone is, like, that once you get into your early 20s or, like, after college or whatever, that you're, like, gonna be completely independent and everything. And it's just not possible for everyone. I think even for neurotypicals nowadays, it's really hard to, like, become self-sufficient at such a young age. And I think for neurodivergent people, especially undiagnosed neurodivergence, which I feel like I would categorize Hannah as an undiagnosed neurodivergent person, I feel like it can be even harder because you're also trying to figure out, like, all these neurotypical norms. And anyways, I remember that scene very well. And then I remember, like, hearing these things about how people would call her character privileged or selfish. And I remember that also bothered me a lot because I was like, I don't see that at all. I see someone that's trying to figure herself out, figure out her relationships, figure out the world and her career and be a writer. So yeah, how did you respond to, like, those criticisms of, like, people calling her selfish and stuff?
I felt really bad because I think I connected on such a deep level with Hannah. And then when I realized that people were viewing her in that way, I was like, so that means a lot of people probably see me this way. And it checks out because I've had so many situations. Like, I've been called selfish and I've been called controlling and, like, all these different things. And it sucks to, like, be inside of a body that like, your mind, or it just sucks to deal with these things internally and other people are not understanding why it's happening or what's going on. And so there's not, like, any empathy or sympathy or understanding because people just don't seem to understand the root of why certain things happen or why it may come across as selfish, but really it's, like, because of a different reason. And it's, like, I think there's just a lack of understanding that leads to a lot of autistic people or neurodivergent people just feeling very dismissed and very misunderstood a lot of times. So yeah, I had a strong reaction to it, and I think it made me relate even more to her. And there's just so many moments in the show that I saw, like, glimpses of myself in Hannah. I'm trying to think of more from the beginning. I think it's just, I mean, even, like, with how she's trying to be a writer, like you said, and she, like, gets cut off from her parents in such an abrupt way, and people then see it as, like, she's so privileged to be wanting her parents to pay for her and all this stuff, when really, like, that was a really harsh cutoff that her parents gave her, and it's, like, you know, like, transitioning into having to find a job. And she ends up doing it too. Like, she ends up, like, finding different jobs and, like, making it work somehow. And yeah, I definitely relate to so many aspects of Hannah. And I feel really bad for the way that the world sees her. But that's not to say, like, of course, there's definitely, like, some problematic things she does, you know, like, not, like, we can't excuse certain things. But overall, just, like, as a character, I think the world sees her in a very, in a way that, like, fails to understand the depth of her experience.
Yeah. Do you think that... Do you think that Lena Dunham perhaps saw Hannah's character in a different way that she was perceived from people that were watching the show?
I don't know. That's such a good question. Like, I do wonder if she wrote the character, like, to be seen as selfish or if, like, I don't know if in real life if she's neurodivergent.
That's another, that's another question I was going to get to is, if you think she might be, I guess the first thing that came up to me is if you think Hannah might be an undiagnosed autistic and if they should have diagnosed her, if they should have made that clear in the show. And then also, like, if maybe Lena Dunham is neurodivergent herself and was kind of using the show as a way to, like, tell her stories as well, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's possible. I also think it's interesting that in the show, Hannah does have OCD.
That's true.
So, and I don't know if that's based on real experience that Lena Dunham has, like, if she has OCD. I think it's possible, though. I think a lot of writers and just, like, a lot of people in media can use, like, stories or their art to tell their experience. So, I mean, I think it's very possible. I also think that it's hard to so accurately write a neurodivergent character if you don't actually have that experience.
True.
And I found it to be a very accurate depiction of, like, an undiagnosed autistic or neurodivergent person. And so that makes me believe that it's highly possible that she is neurodivergent in some way, just because I think it would be hard to, like, get such an accurate depiction if not.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt the same way. Like, I felt like for it to resonate, like, this strongly with the undiagnosed or high masking neurodivergent experience, it has to, like, maybe she is neurodivergent herself, like, maybe it was neurodivergent coded. And I felt the same way about The Big Bang Theory for a long time, and I remember it was just something that I was like, I had in the back of my head, like, but. And I remember originally, because my original diagnosis was Asperger's, even though I do not like to use that term anymore. And I remember, but that's all, like, the only term I knew at the time, like, when The Big Bang Theory was going on. And I remember always, like, thinking about it, like, oh, could Sheldon be like me? Would he also have, like, the same kind of diagnosis? And then I remember just randomly, like, Googling it on the internet, like, Sheldon Cooper autistic or Asperger's or something, and a bunch of stuff came up. It was like, oh my god, like, so much stuff came up, and I was like, oh wow, okay, so other people are, like, catching on to this too. And then years later I found out that one of the creators, Bill Prady, is in fact autistic, and that the Sheldon character was based a lot on him. And so then that made me, I mean, of course I had this whole debate, like, in my head on if they should have diagnosed him or made it clear in the show that he's autistic. And then that's where I was thinking about girls too. And I think it is, like, it's tricky because I think on one hand it's important because it does destigmatize a little bit of like the idea that people have around what an autistic person, an autistic character is supposed to look like. But then on the other hand, sometimes when they do, when I see shows that do make someone autistic, I feel like they write on it too much, or they kind of blow it up too much, and they make it seem that the person, that their only personality trait is being autistic. And that's what drives me crazy about shows like The Good Doctor, where they name him like autistic, where the character is like autistic from the beginning, but and atypical too in a way, but they don't, I think even atypical is different, but what really bothers me about The Good Doctor is that they never give him personality. And like that show is like into the sixth season now, and I stopped watching it a while ago because I got frustrated, because it's like, because they don't give him any personality. So I think it would have maybe been cool if she were like, if it were clear that she was like struggling, like, but and that like she had these differences, and that maybe it was because she was autistic, but also maybe like without, like it's tricky like to do that, because then it wouldn't, they wouldn't have wanted to make it too much about her being autistic. But yeah, I guess I was wondering like if you've ever thought about that, like what would it be like if they, if they had diagnosed her, or if they, if she had self-diagnosed, or if like yeah, like what did you think about like maybe different ways that could have gone?
Yeah, it's a good question because I think this comes up for so many different like shows or movies where it's like the character is very obviously neurodivergent or very obviously autistic, and it's like we then kind of rely on the audience to pick that up because it's not explicitly stated anywhere. And I think that's okay, but the thing that bothers me about that is it often feels like a missed opportunity because the people that are going to pick up on that are the people that are autistic or neurodivergent. Like other people, holistic people, neurotypical people, they're not going to pick up on that most likely because they don't relate to it in the same way that an autistic person is going to. And I mean, of course, some of them might pick up on it if they're like really aware and educated on whatever it is. But like at large, the general public is probably not, it's gonna be missed largely. And that really bothered me because I think if there's like a delicate way that it can be known about the character without the character solely being about that. Because I think like for example in Girls, if it was introduced similar to how the OCD thing was introduced, I think it could have been good because with OCD, like it only came up in a few episodes, but like we all know as the viewers, because it's explicitly stated, like we know she has OCD, we know that she does have immense struggles and did in her past have immense struggles because of it. But it's not something that is like the only thing we know about her. It's not the only character trait. It's not the only personality trait that she has. It's just a part of her character. And we see it come up every now and again. So I think if it could have been like that, where, you know, even if there's one episode where she's just like exploring it, like she's doing Google searches with like autism in women or things like that, you know, just so the audience is like, oh, huh, you know, like she's looking that up. I wonder. And then, like, you know, it just gets it so like more people are aware and thinking about it because the general public just isn't going to know otherwise.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking about too. And it relates to like how other autistic coded characters that I've seen have been perceived, like by neurotypical is like, okay, it's like you said, it's different. Like, with the way neurodivergent people see them is like, oh wow, like I relate a lot to that. But then like the way neurotypicals see them is they often get seen as weird and quirky and nerdy and strange and all these like negative things like we get bullied for a lot. And it would have, like, that's where I feel like if it were done in the right way, where he like comes to find out that he was actually autistic, or he's a high masking autistic person, I feel like in a way that really promotes acceptance too. I think it does. I think that's huge for, I think, both neurodivergent and neurotypical people, because for neurodivergent people, like, they're already picking up so strongly on it that it's just, and then maybe it is like you said, maybe it's someone high masking, undiagnosed, that doesn't even realize this about themselves and are trying to figure out why they're so different. And it's like, not only is it validation for them as a neurodivergent person, it's like, oh my God, this might actually be what's up with me and why I'm different. And so like people can accept and understand themselves. But I think, like you said too, it's so important for the neurotypicals to see that, because they're not automatically going to make that connection. Like they're going to just label him as weird or her as weird and quirky or whatnot. But then I feel like with that revelation, oh, they're a high masking autistic, it expands their understanding of autism and masking and everything. But I feel like it helps promote acceptance, because then like it's very likely like a lot of those people watching, like, that they have an autistic classmate or they have an autistic coworker. And I feel like if they were to watch a show like that and then it becomes revealed, like, oh my gosh, this person is actually a high masking autistic person and this is how they see the world and how they process information, and then they'll remember, they'll be like, oh, this guy reminds me of Boris from work. This guy reminds me of Sam from school. This guy reminds me of Julia from school. And then be like, oh, wow. So that's why Julia is like, that's why Julia does this, or that's why Julia does that. Like, oh, maybe I think I understand Julia a little better now. I think I don't see her as weird so much anymore. So like, I feel like that's where it can really help neurotypicals understand more about neurodivergence as well.
Right. Exactly. And I think so many people make the argument against that of like, oh, well, you know, art and shows and movies, they're meant to be interpreted by the viewer in all different ways. Like, there's so many ways we can interpret it. But it's like, some things aren't interpretation, like some things are facts, and it's like, factually, those are neurodivergent traits, and so if we name that, it would go to such great lengths of like promoting awareness and acceptance and like triggering the thought, like you said, in so many people that would not have put it together otherwise. So it's like, to me, like, yeah, you can make the argument of interpretation, but also let's just, like, be honest about facts and about, like, purposefully and, like, quite literally using neurodivergent traits to build a character. Like, I think that should be credited. And whether that's, like, in interviews of just talking about character development or made explicit in the show somehow, like, I think that should be credited, because we're at a point where there isn't the level of awareness and acceptance that we need. And so, like, once we're there, sure, like, you can not be obvious about it. But, like, before, because we're still on the journey of helping to educate people and, like, the general public needs to be more aware, I think it feels just, like, not good to have the traits used for entertainment purposes without giving credit at all, you know? And I don't see that in, obviously, like, I don't feel that way about girls, because also, like, this was years ago that it was written and everything, But now, in more current stuff, like with the movie Poor Things, this just really grinds my gears. It really gets me going because I'm like, come on, like, it's so obvious. Just say it somewhere. Say it. Just say something.
Yeah, exactly. And they don't even have to like mention it a lot. Like they could even just mention it once or twice and it would have a huge impact on like really making people reflect. But I feel like, yeah, like it's either we don't see it mentioned enough or we don't see it or we see it mentioned or we see they make the whole story about like their stigmatized idea, like when it's neurotypical shows, like I feel like because I have a strong inclining that Lena Dunham is neurodivergent, I feel like of course it wouldn't happen with girls, like they would it wouldn't be a stigmatized portrayal, but I see a lot of neurotypical run or rush produced shows that end up just showing all the stigmas and stereotypes of a neurodivergence.
Exactly. Yeah, there's like no middle ground. It's either like this is the most autistic person you're ever gonna see, or we're just gonna use all the autistic traits and not say anything about it ever and just let everyone think they're just weird and quirky and whatever.
Exactly, which is such a shame, yeah, because yeah. Anyways, the next question that I had for you is, what do you think of the Shoshona character and like how also like as the seasons evolved, like what were some more things you noticed about Hannah and maybe about Shoshona too that maybe started giving you more suspicions about like neurodiversity?
I mean, I think Shoshana is definitely neurodivergent also. And that also leads me to believe that Lena Dunham is, because like it's kind of like all these characters have neurodivergent qualities, some more than others. But Shoshana definitely as well. So I mean, there's so many things about her, like her cadence, her gait. She can be very naive about things. And I really like the way that her character grows throughout the show too, because we start out with her just being like very much like a follower in the group. Like she's kind of very, she like really idolizes her cousin Jessa and all the other girls, and she feels really behind them and wants to catch up really badly. And at the end of the show, we see that she kind of chooses to like go her own way and split off from the group a little bit, and I like that development because it shows that she like kind of comes into her own person throughout the show. And I like that a lot. I like that she gets to know herself more and decides to loosen her ties with them, because she actually sees in the end that maybe they didn't understand her or accept her the way that she deserved to be understood and accepted, which I relate to also with a lot of relationships that I've had. But Shoshana definitely, like, there's one episode where I think it's when it was after Adam's like big role in the play, and they go to the hotel and they're like having an after party for him to congratulate him. And Jessa and the guy from the rehab that she was at, they're talking to Shoshana, and the guy is like, "Where did you get the cocaine that you're on?" And Shoshana's like, "Oh, I just always talk this fast. Like I'm always this excited."
Ah,
And
that's right.
I just love that part, because it's like sometimes like, it reminded me of like when I'm really excited about something or like talking about a special interest, the way that I can talk really fast and excitedly about it. Yeah, I love Shoshana.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, and I could definitely see like the special interest thing. Like I get like that when I talk about my special interest too, and then even just like having ADHD as well, and being like getting in these spurts where I get really hyperactive. And it does relate to like the fact that the guy asked if she was on cocaine or something, like how outsiders perceive it a lot of times, like me being really hyper-focused on something or really interested or something on something or talking really fast. So yeah, that's another good point of like a classic neurodivergent experience. And yeah, like I think about it now, like I think it would have been, even though it would have been like cool if they could have incorporated, like if they could have shown like, oh, like this is high masking neurodivergence, but I wonder, in a way I think it's still, it would help, even if they don't realize initially that it's high masking neurodivergence, it might help a lot of neurodivergent people relate, like you were saying earlier, like they see like the hyperactivity or the talking about special interest or being perceived as being high or whatnot. Yeah. And they could relate to that experience and being like, oh, and I think even just that alone could help them already in some way of being like, oh, I'm not alone in these experiences. Like I'm not this is something that other people can experience too. And like, oh my God, like this character relates. Cause yeah, like I'm reflecting more now, like even before, like I started seeing certain TV characters as neurodivergent or neurodivergent coded. There is that powerful thing that happens where you're able to relate really strongly to a character's experiences and kind of see it mirrored on yourself.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I think about also, like, when I was younger, like, when I was first watching Girls for the first time when it was airing, like, I just think about if there was some mention of autism and, like, being highly masked and if she was looking it up or if there was any exploration of that, I wonder then if it would have triggered me to start looking into it.
Yeah.
And maybe, like, I would have known, you know, 15 or 10 years earlier, which who knows how that could have changed my life. So, yeah, just it could be so powerful to just be honest about that and, like, let people know what they're watching.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's what I was thinking, too. Like, because even if – and I think about this also, like, in terms of, like, had I got the bigger question of like, had I gotten my diagnosis sooner, like if I found out that I was autistic when I was like 8 instead of 16, would it have been like, even though I have questions of like how I would have been treated by society, because what I feel like is a lot of people, like, if you're undiagnosed, you're just, like, because your mask is good enough, people think that, people discredit that you're struggling. But then I feel like also, like, I've read from people that get diagnosed early and that have the diagnosis, but then it's a different kind of ableism where people just kind of look down on you or discredit you or infantilize you or don't take you seriously. And that can happen to people also after they disclose, but I think what the difference that it would have had is I would have been more understanding and accepting of myself, like for you too, probably, like it could have had that impact. Yeah. So like even it's, 'cause then I realized like, even just for ourselves, it can be so powerful. So even if society weren't more accepting of me for having the diagnosis. I think what's really powerful is that once we get the diagnosis, we're so much more accepting and understanding and patient and compassionate towards ourselves.
Exactly. Like, there's so many things that happened throughout my life that were strictly due to me trying to understand myself, or due to me trying to push myself because I didn't understand what was going on and, like, hating myself for it. Like, most of my issues came from self-hatred. Like, most of the terrible things that I went through stemmed from me putting myself in those situations purposefully because I was mad at myself. So it's like, if I had that understanding, if I just knew what it was, you know, yeah. Like, I think it could have changed so many things and prevented a lot of, like, negative situations that I was in.
Definitely, yeah. Same for me. I wanted to ask you a little bit, I guess since we were on the topic of characters, what did you think of the Adam character? Because I also felt like Adam could be potentially, like, undiagnosed autistic too.
Yeah, I love Adam. I think Adam might be my favorite character, honestly, because I think he's really funny and, like, very, very, very interesting. Like, just an interesting person. And I'm very drawn to him for that reason. And I think that's also why Adam and Hannah get along so well, is because I think they really understand each other in a way that most other people don't.
Yeah.
Just like in the episodes where they start officially dating and Adam is, like, staying over at Hannah and Marnie's, often Marnie is, like, talking about, I think in one episode, Marnie is talking to Jessa about Adam and saying how weird she thinks he is. And how just, like, totally weird and odd. And then it's like Hannah, on the other hand, sees him as so just, like, mesmerizing and so interesting and amazing for all of the same reasons that Marnie finds him weird. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I like Hannah's way of seeing him. I think Adam, yeah, I mean, he's definitely, like, a very unique character, and I think he also has a lot of neurodivergent traits. I also think something that also strikes me as neurodivergent coded is the way that he talks about work and not fitting into, like, traditional structures of work in society. And he and Hannah connect on that when she gets fired, or when she quits her writing job, or not her writing job, her, like, office job.
Yeah.
And I like that too. I relate to that because, like, the typical 9-to-5, like, selling your soul to jobs that you don't really care that much about, like, totally doesn't work for me. Like, I can't imagine how it works for anyone. Like, I don't know how people do it. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I really relate to Adam on that.
Yeah, me too. Like, I also have a really hard time with, like, typical, like, job and office structures. Like, I've worked in an office with a neurotypical person before, and it's there's a lot of, like, miscommunication and just, like, little things. Like, you don't even, not even, like, it's just, like, it feels like every little interaction, like, every, like, they just, neurotypicals just have a very different way of doing things, and that it's not even just that, but it's, like, the hidden meanings, hidden expectations. And then, like, what I hear a lot from people, what I also feel like is very unfair, is, like, the office culture. Like, I was lucky that I never worked in, like, a really big office, but, like, I know, like, there's so many offices out there that they have, like, these parties and, like, events or whatever, like, and it's really, like, they force you to like mingle with everyone else, but like it's a very neurotypical biased kind of thing, so people like it's a lot of small talk, and it's like a lot of stuff that can be really stressful and overwhelming for neurodivergent people. And then so many times like neurodivergent people end up being forced to participate in these things, even when it's like non-mandatory, it's always like there's this pressure, you know, and then like you get like the side eye or whatever if you don't go, which feels mandatory. And something that I was remembering now is that you were talking about like neurotypical, like, yeah, like how it's really hard to wrap our heads around the ideas that like there are people that really that like that environment or that thrive in that environment or that. And I also think that it's like because autistic people are more likely to question things and like think about, does this make sense? Like, what's this whole dynamic? Why is it like this? Like, why does that happen? Why do we have to do these like little party things? Like, I think there's a lot of questioning that we have because we see the world in a different way in such detail sometimes, and I feel like we're able to pick apart a lot of these things. And I remember hearing something recently about how neurotypicals, they don't question these norms as much, and they just go with it, and that is definitely something that that's been like hitting really strongly for me, is that I've been noticing like, oh yeah, like sometimes like there are neurotypicals that like they might not like it either, but then like they project it on us so much because they just go with the, like they think, because they think that they can't question things or that it's taboo, like all this whole thing about like it being so taboo to question things, but then it's like they get angry at us for question. And I think now I'm really having a revelation, is that like I think they get angry at us a lot of times because we question the things out loud that they had maybe thought about before, and like we're pointing it out. And I guess there's like such this taboo about pointing things out, so I feel like that's how we get a lot of criticism too.
Definitely. I remember even as a kid being told that I asked a lot of questions, and like, and this was both like in my family but also in school, like a lot of people would point out to me or like kind of make fun of the questions that I asked, because to them I was asking like silly questions because the answer didn't matter, or like it was like an assumed thing or things like that I didn't get or didn't make sense to me. And so like being made fun of for asking those questions, because apparently like, you know, there's just like assumed answers a lot of times, or like there's just expectations that you're supposed to understand certain things when really like there's no reason, or just little things like even norms when I was younger, like how there's certain things you're not supposed to ask people, or there's like certain gestures you're not supposed to make, or like politeness things, like social niceties, those things didn't really make sense to me. And so I'd ask that about them, and often people wouldn't have an answer, and that would upset them because even they themselves didn't know why they were doing it. They were just doing it because they're supposed to.
Exactly. Because they never questioned it themselves. And so maybe they feel like we're like were like asking the questions that they never asked and were like uncovering. It's like this whole, it makes me think of like taking a blanket off of something. Like there's something that neurotypical society keeps covered, like, oh, like we shall never talk about this, and then like people like get uncomfortable and they're like not sure but why and this or that, but they never, they feel like they never can do it, they never can talk about it, and someone finally just comes and like puts the takes the blanket off and like, oh, let's talk about this. And I think it's because like they never felt allowed to talk about, so it like really like it takes them aback when they're like following these little rules like so meticulously, and someone finally comes. Maybe it even causes them to be frustrated at themselves too, like, oh, well, I never questioned that, or, and then this person comes and questions it, and now I'm questioning it. Like, I think about that a lot, about like this discomfort that neurotypicals end up developing around us calling stuff for what it is. And it makes me think of how many people might have thought the same things, but just like never voiced them and repressed them and felt that it was wrong. And I feel like there's still a lot of neurodivergent people out there with internalized ableism that have never questioned it. And it's reminding me of, not to get too much off topic, but of one of the groups that you had recently, and that there was one member that he was autistic himself, but he had been in neurotypical environments for so long, and he had been accustomed to reading neurotypical body language and like using neurotypical methods of communication, that he came to understand that as the correct way of communicating or whatnot, even though there's no real correct way. And I remember just how taken aback he was in the first meeting that he joined from our series last month, that he like couldn't understand, like he couldn't read anyone because he was trying to use all these neurotypical cues that he had learned. And then I just remember like at the end, even the next meeting, but particularly also at the end of that series, how moved he was that he had just figured out that we just have a different, like autistics in general, like, and like in that, everyone in that group, like we just had a different way of communicating. Like he had been so, it had been so ingrained in him to like to look for like neurotypical like nonverbal signals, and that he was put off by like we weren't giving that, but what we, and I remember the specific thing that he said, like, you guys just say stuff. And I was just like, yeah, because like, I was just like, that's what it is. It's like we just say things. We just call things for what they are, and we just like open up and share our experiences. And I just remember like, I remember witnessing how impacted he was by that. And I feel like that's also like what makes it so, one of the things that makes it so important to have that representation of like what it is like to be a high masking autistic and like questioning these constructs and stuff, because then people that are even neurodivergent themselves that have always been conditioned to think the neurotypical way is correct, they can finally like, it opens their eyes too. Yeah,
definitely. And that's something I really love about the autistic experience that I've had, and like that in is a big part of support groups is like being able to really lean into like a lot of the communication styles that autistic people can have that often are like pushed aside or not welcomed in more neurotypical spaces. Mm-hmm. I really love that. I love like the very honest way that autistic people can communicate with each other. It's very refreshing.
Yeah, me too. Because it is just like, it's always felt to me that it's just like, it's just, you know, like no bullshit. It's like, just lay it out on the table, just say what it is. And neurotypicals, there's like, there's so much. I just, one thing I found is that there's a lot of fluff, you know? It's all fluff. It's like neurotypical conversations, like small talk, like stuff like that. It's like, and then like, we're like trying to like talk about things with like, just by kind of like circling around them, but never saying what you really feel. And then also, I feel like when neurotypicals are making judgment about something, they're like, they don't like something, or they have a certain reaction, or they have a certain opinion, and they'll just, because I have neurotypical friends that do this, and it's so obvious to me now, but it's like, and they, and the other thing is they think that they're not, they don't realize that they're being obvious, and I don't think it's because of, I think it might be because autistic people can pick up on that more, more perhaps, but like, yeah. Sorry?
I think you're right. I think a lot of autistic people can pick up on inauthenticity easier.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's just so prevalent, like this whole, like, cause I have one neurotypical friend particularly that I'm remembering now that like she doesn't like something, or she has an opinion about something, and she'll just like make like this, she'll make these faces or whatnot, and it's just like you can tell that she's judging the whatever it is that's going on. And it's just like, oh, okay. Because like, this actually happened in the, I have like, and we do like this acting workshop, like we call it the alumni studio every Wednesday at the school I went to. And this person, my friend, who's neurotypical, was working with another, she was working with two other people in the scene. And basically it's like her and this other lady who also happens to be neurotypical are in a, living in a house, and they're welcome, they're like recruiting someone to live with them to be their roommate. And so this scene specifically, like the this new person had just moved in, and was like, they had gone out to a party or something, and then they came home and they were like smoking and snacking on the couch or something like that. And my friend's character Jessica like just comes in and is like you can tell like she's being so judgmental and stuff. And the other character, who was played by my friend Maeve, who actually happens to be neurodivergent, although I don't know if her character is supposed to be, but I know that she is, and she was just, I remember her asking directly, like, at least a couple times, like, oh, do you mind, or is there something wrong, or, you know, like, and I feel like so many times, like, I've done that just kind of trying to check in, because you notice that this person is uncomfortable. Like, I could see that the character that was played by my neurotypical friend was very uncomfortable, and, but, like, she just kept making these faces and stuff, and then the person would ask, like, oh, is there something wrong, or blah, 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 and then she'd be like, oh, no, it's just, no, No. Yeah, but I'm just like, oh, come on. You know, like, you're obviously judging. You obviously have a problem. But you're just, like, playing it off, and you're just, like, I don't know. It was just so obvious to me. And then it's, like, after the scenes, like, we'll break it down. Like, we, usually people ask, like, people that we're watching for feed, we'll give, like, a little feedback or whatnot. And I just remember, like, mentioning, like, oh, I could tell that Jessica, was really, her character was Jessica, and I was like, oh, I could tell that Jessica was, you know, really, not into what was going on, and that she was, like, quietly judging. And I just remember my friend, like, when I told her that, like, she seemed, like, very surprised. She was like, oh, like, she's even, like, a little bit ashamed or something, maybe, like, but it just gave me this, like, it gave me this vibe that it was like, oh, like, she thought that she was actually, she was surprised that I had picked up on that. Like, she thought that she was doing a good job of hiding it. And I was...
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. I definitely, I can understand that too. It's like, and it's something that in the mindfulness class I was taking with a professor theorized that autistic people in some cases are more sensitive to like certain body cues and like to certain like reading facial expressions, especially like I find it especially with people that I know, because with people that I know well, I can detect such minor changes in their face or their voice, and it's like very impacting to me and very like annoying and upsetting if I can tell something's wrong and the person is like, oh, like how you said, like, oh no,
exactly, no, no,
that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Like, oh no,
right?
Like, I'm like, come on.
It's so obvious.
Come on, like. Oh my gosh. Like, yeah, because I've had that even, like, with my sister. Like, she'll be upset about something, and I can just tell. And then it'll happen sometimes where she'll deny it. Like, she'll still try to deny it. And this has happened before where she denies it. And then, like, 30 minutes later, she'll be like, yeah, I was upset about that and this or that, and I'm like, okay, I knew it.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah. I wanted to, I think I have a couple more questions about, like, mainly about the end of the show and, like, when, in the last season, I guess, yeah, okay, spoiler warning. For everybody listening, if you haven't finished the show and you don't want to know what happens, don't listen to this part. But I was wondering what you thought, Ashra, about like when Hannah gets, well, when Hannah's dad comes out as being gay, and like the fact that who was it, Elijah, I think, had noticed that, like, in the very beginning of the show, when Elijah came out as, or no, like, I think Hannah already knew that he was gay, right? That Elijah was gay?
In the beginning?
Yeah.
I think there's this scene of them meeting, oh, it's because Hannah, yeah, this is definitely spoiler alert for, if anyone hasn't seen it, but Hannah gets HPV. And so she meets up with Elijah to be like, she's kind of accusatory. She's like, well, I haven't slept with anyone else really. And the only other person I have slept with says that they don't have HPV. So it must be from you. And then it kind of comes out because Elijah believes that they're meeting up because he thinks that Hannah knows that he's been dating a guy. But really, she wanted to talk about the HPV thing. So then he kind of tells Hannah, like, yeah, it's true. I've been dating a guy. And then Hannah's like, oh, and she didn't realize. And then she's kind of like, she gets upset because she's like, oh, well, then if you're gay, then how did you date me? And then he says, well, there's a handsomeness to you. And then she gets very offended by that and she starts crying.
I do remember that now. That's right.
Yeah. But he does, in that scene, he brings up that he's like, well, maybe you should take a look at your dad or something like
that. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right, because that's the one part that I really, it, like, stuck with me, like, that he makes that, I feel like he said something like, he always thought, like, I always thought your dad, I can't remember exactly what he said, like, or maybe it was, like, you should look into your dad,
and... and then Hannah ends up being like, oh, he brings up that Hannah's dad has like an ear piercing or something. And then Hannah's like, well, he got that on a trip with all of his male friends. And then Elijah's like, okay.
Yeah. Cause I do remember like there being that, like, where Elijah's like, yeah, and you know, he's basically like, yeah, you know your dad's gay, right? And then Hannah gets super offended, and she's like, no, my dad, like, what do you mean? Like, and then it's funny because we don't, like, that doesn't get touched on again for, like, several seasons, like, most of the show. And then it comes up, if I'm not mistaken, at the beginning, gosh, I can't remember if it was the 5th season or the 6th season. But it was, like, one of the last couples. It was either, like, the 5th or the 6th, I'm almost sure. And, yeah, then it comes up where her dad comes out. I guess, I think he comes out to her mom.
Yeah.
Because they were, like, having, I remember something, like, they were having... They were starting to have more arguments and stuff and kind of, like, in a rough patch, or, like, they were just, like, mm-hmm. not connect. Like, you could tell their marriage was kind of struggling. And then he comes out to her mom, and then her mom tells Hannah, and then, like, they're all, like, processing that and what that looks like. And then her dad comes to visit her in New York. And, like, starts going out with this guy. But then, like, Hannah is, like, talking to him. And then he's, like, I think I remember it was, like, something, like, she's asking him, like, so when are you guys gonna split up or something like that? And she's, like, and then he's, like, oh, we're actually gonna try to make it work. So, yeah, like, what did you think about, like, that whole dynamic and how they brought that in, and like how her dad and her mom were like gonna try to make it work for a while, and how her mom gets really angry, but then it feels like kind of starts accepting the situation a little more and they decide to go their own ways. And yeah, how did you feel about all that?
I thought it was something that struck me was when I think they were, like, they were doing, like, marriage counseling, and then right after the session ends, the dad ends up telling the mom that he's gay, and she immediately is, like, she immediately makes it about her, and is, like, saying that he's doing it on purpose to get out of the marriage, which I found so interesting, because I tried to put myself in that perspective of, like, if I was married to someone and then they told me they're gay, I feel like I would never think of it as, like, they're trying to use it as an excuse. I would instead be, like, I mean, obviously I'd probably be surprised, but I wouldn't, like, throw it at them as, like, oh, you're making an excuse to get out of the marriage. But I thought that was interesting. I also, I thought it was funny when he comes to visit and him and Elijah, like, go shopping.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they're like saying that he looked like a daddy, and Hannah's like, okay, you guys can't say that. Like, I'm proud of you and I want you to like lean into your gay experience, but like you're actually my daddy, so I don't want other people to be calling you daddy.
Yeah, that was
And that's
good.
kind of funny. Yeah, Hannah says a lot of like kind of like problematic things, but kind of funny things. Like sometimes there's something else she says that was weird, but I can't remember what it was. But yeah, I thought it was a fun exploration throughout the show of like him, coming out later in life and like exploring it, and like he ends up getting into a really good relationship where like Hannah ends up being, like she has a relationship with her dad's boyfriend and stuff, which I think is fun. And I think it's also fun when he meets up with the guy off of, I think they connected on Facebook, and he like ends up forgetting his wallet at the guy's
That's
apartment, and
right.
Hannah go and get it, and it's funny. And he's like, his job is that he sells boots, and Hannah's like interested in that because she wants to get a pair of boots. The whole thing is pretty funny to me. I like.
Yeah, I like how they did that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, something that came up for me now was like with this whole like how her mom, how Hannah's mom was initially kind of gatekeeping her dad and trying to like saying that he was doing it to get out of the marriage or like an excuse, like, and that just resonated. It reminded me of what we get told, what autistic people get told when we come out to neurotypicals.
Yeah, totally.
That and I wonder if maybe there was like maybe there was an intentional connection there that didn't get voiced, but like back to like the neurodivergent coding or like parts that might have been neurodivergent coded, like that part, even just like when you were describing it, like how her mom accuses her dad of like using his gayness as an excuse or whatever, like that, it just hit me so hard. I was like, wow, because that's exactly what we get told as autistics when we're like, and it's possible that that connection hadn't even been thought of, that it's just something that kind of happened, but it was like, I was like, oh wow, like that makes a lot of sense because people, they, it's kind of like they don't want to see it too, because, and I feel like that's also how it relates. Like, her mom was kind of in denial. Like, she didn't want to see the fact that her husband was gay. So, like, and I feel like that's a lot of like society. Like, they don't want to see that these disabilities and differences are a lot more common than they think. And I think it forces them to look a little bit within like themselves, but also at like how they've interacted with people that could be autistic or how they've seen that. And that it is like something that's out there and that is like so still so underdiagnosed, but like when people come out that we still have that resistance, like from people not wanting to believe us because they don't want to admit to themselves that they were wrong about this for so long. Like, I see that a lot, like with all sorts of stuff. Like, I think that's a huge part of like the resistance that we get when we come out as autistic is because people don't want to recognize that they were wrong about autism, or that they were wrong about how they treated us, or that they were wrong that, these struggles and needs are valid and that we need support for them. I feel like it opens it forces them to open a box that they're not always comfortable opening, and they have to confront it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I have one. I know that we're like over an hour already, and I do have, if you have time, I have one more question about another spoiler alert, by the way, for everybody. But what you thought about Hannah's pregnancy, and I think the ending of the show, and like how they closed that out, like what were your thoughts of it? Like, were you surprised by it? Did you kind of expect it? And also what you thought, like thinking in retrospect?
Well, I was really surprised, totally wasn't expecting it. And my immediate reaction was that I actually didn't like it. I didn't like the pregnancy at the end. I honestly felt like it was too dramatic of an ending. I think it's also for reasons of like, I get really sad when things end and when things change. And I felt really, really like triggered by such an extreme change in the setup of the show, like how she ends up moving and everything, and like isn't near the friends anymore. Marnie goes with her, but like the whole thing was just such a big change. And I think I wanted it to end with everything being the same. Like, I wanted her to still be working on her writing, and I wanted it to stay the same, because that just felt comfortable to me. And I don't know. I guess I just, it felt a little out of place, like the whole pregnancy thing. Like, it felt very, I don't know. It kind of confused me. I wasn't expecting it, and I didn't love it. Like, that's the only thing about Girls in the entirety of the show, the only thing that always gets me is that I'm not sure that I really like how it ended. Like, I think I wanted it to be a less dramatic thing. Like, I wanted it to just be that, like, yeah, she just kept going on her journey and, like, kept doing her writing, and we don't, not even necessarily, like, that we know what ends up happening. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's it, too. Maybe I didn't want to know. Like, maybe I didn't want to know. You know?
Yeah, it felt like a little bit, I think for me too, like it was very sudden, and that we're just like, this major event just kind of like gets thrown in there, and especially like it being like right as the show is ending, and then we're kind of like left. It felt a little bit like a cliffhanger, maybe, like where like I felt like, oh, I really want to know now, like what happens, like with like Hannah, like because it ends up being like Hannah moves in with her mom, and then Marnie moves in with them as well, and it's kind of like, it just, yeah, it was like definitely not what I expected, and it was also like it feels like, it felt like there's more. Like, I wonder, like, I think there was a part of me that was, like, wishing they had explored more of, like, the relationship, like, with the dad, and, like, how, like, does he end up coming back and being involved in some way, or does he just, I also felt like it was very, like, he's just like, oh, okay, cool, so you don't need anything, so... So bye, and I don't know if, like, because I think even if, like, I don't know, even if I didn't, if I were in that situation, like, I really didn't want or expect a kid in that moment, I don't know if I would have been able to truthfully just disregard it and forget about it. Like, I think at least for me, it would have been something that would have been definitely pressing on my head, like, wow, like, I have a son, like, I don't know, it definitely, like, surprised me, like, because I felt like everything else was, like, so well connected in the show. Like, you could see how one thing led to another, and it was just, like, this building, like, succession. And then I feel like the pregnancy thing was kind of just, like, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I felt like it was a little bit of, like, a reach, like, that they wanted it to be this, like, big thing that happened at the end. And it felt unnecessary to me. Like, I didn't think it needed to go in that direction. Like, I felt like it could have just been, like, a way more just, like, plain ending, I guess. Like it didn't need to be all of that. Like, it went into, like, them, like, Marnie was helping out with raising the baby and, like, going to doctor and stuff, and kind of gets this new, you know, she ends up, like, working as a professor, I think, at a college, and I don't know, it felt unnecessary. Like, I think it stayed where it was. I didn't think we needed all of that.
Exactly, and I felt like, in a way, it just made me, like, it felt abrupt. Like, it made the ending feel very abrupt. It made me long for, like, wanting more. Whereas it's interesting, like, because if they had ended it in a different way and not done the whole pregnancy thing, like, I feel like there was, it definitely could have been, like, I feel like a lot of shows, like, where you're, like, you're sad it ended and everything, but it feels right, or it feels like things are kind of going on the path that you expected them to. And you can kind of picture what happens. I guess that's another thing, is, like, especially for autistic brains like ours, like, we, or at least for me, like, I feel like I have this, like, if I can project an idea in my head, like, I have an idea of, like, oh, okay, this is probably what happens after this. Like, I can kind of close it out in my head smoothly. And in this, it made it really hard with, like, just getting these two big, like, pieces of, like, story. Like, oh my god, these major things. Like, this major thing happening with her pregnancy and then the baby. And then, and it left me, like, and maybe, I don't know if this was the intention, but it, I feel like it left me more starved for a continuation. It was, like, definitely a cliffhanger kind of feeling.
I totally agree. Like, it wasn't a satisfying ending. Like, I remember at the end being like, come on, like, I didn't want it to end like that.
Yeah.
Like, only part of the show that really disappointed me. I felt like it was, like, if they avoided that whole thing, it could have just ended with, like, a closure where, like, it doesn't have to, like, not all the loose ends have to be tied. And I think, like, that's the beauty of it ending, and then it continues in any way that we interpret it. But with this, it was, like, almost honestly a little bit too specific, because it's like, oh, okay, so she just, like, we know everything. Like, we know that she's, like, has this baby, and she's just going to raise this baby now. Like, if we avoided all that, it could have been that it went anywhere. Or, like, that we just know, like, Hannah as a character, and, like, we can kind of think about where it goes. Like, if she just ended up staying in New York City and just kept on writing and whatever, like, then we can make it anything. But this almost felt like pigeonholed to me, where it was like, oh, so she's just a mom now, and, like, we don't really know what happens, but we know that she has this baby, and she, like, lives in this secluded area where, like, I don't know. It felt weird to me that they ended it that way. It felt really unexpected in, like, a way that didn't align with the rest of the show.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. Yeah. Those are all the questions I had for you, but I just wanted to thank you again for coming on, and this was really great, really fun chat about the show and, like, all the possible, like, neurodivergent coding that we see in there, and, like, the, the connection with, like, our, I'm asking autistic experiences and Hannah's character, Shoshona's character, Adam's character. I really enjoyed discussing all of it with you.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for having me on. It was really fun, and really fun to be able to talk with another autistic person about the show, because I haven't been able to like go in depth with anyone else besides like, you know, some of the people in my life who are not autistic. Mm. So it was fun to get another autistic person's perspective on it.
Nice. Yeah. Well, thank you once again, and thank you everyone for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope we didn't spoil things too much for you. Thanks for listening as always, and I'll see you guys next time.